Welcome to the Hardware Asylum Podcast. This episode, we talk about the challenges of streaming on a retro PC and the ease of building a high-end one. I'm your host, Dennis Garcia, and with me today, I have Darren McCain.
Dennis, last month we talked quite a bit, actually, about one of those amazing, I guess, dream build PCs, or in this case, it was a bit of a...
It was like a dream workstation for videographers or something.
Yeah, like a kind of a no-budget content creation thing.
Yeah.
And we said, okay, maybe not as bad as we thought, so go back and check that out if you'd like. But I thought in contrast this week, we should talk about the builds that we have going on in the lab here.
Oh, yeah.
Because our builds aren't, of course, money no object. In this case, particularly, we have one very practical build that you've been working on for a while, and I want to check in on that, and that'd be the streaming PC setup build.
Oh, yeah. Well, and actually just the retro PC stuff in general.
Right. So let's do a check-in on that, because we've been talking about that off and on. I wanted to talk about what you've been doing lately, because you've made some progress.
Oh, yeah.
And then maybe as a teaser for after that, I noticed that there's a very impressive high-end build that's in progress on the bench back there.
Oh, yeah. And that actually impacted the retro PC stuff. So it would be a nice tie-in, definitely.
But before we get to that crazy machine, because I know that one's a work in progress, let's talk about your recent foray into streaming.
Streaming. Okay. So this is an interesting build-up, really, because... I've done streaming before. Obviously we do the podcast. We don't stream the podcast.
Well, we have, but we did that recently.
Yeah, we did that one time, and it was like, it was a squirrel syndrome. It's like we get a chat, and then we kind of derail the podcast for a while. It was actually really, really fun, so we might have to do that again for, I don't know, maybe Patreon or something like that.
Something like that. But you're right, because streaming... really, by definition, it seems to include a higher level of interaction than we're used to because, you know, as it is right now, when we do these, I'm sure it's very clear. It's just the two of us sitting in the lab and riffing on whatever we've come up with this week, but we don't have that shiny chat window or all those little pop-ups with likes and subscribes.
Yeah. Oh, hey, we got a raid coming in. Yeah, stuff like that. Streaming on Twitch has evolved considerably since it launched, almost 10, 15 years ago, something like that. Twitch has been around a really long time. Before that, it was livestream.com, and then there was justin.tv, and there was a bunch of different platforms, and they've kind of consolidated into Twitch or into YouTube. I guess you can do streaming on Facebook, but why would you want to do that?
Yeah.
It's kind of silly.
Yeah, and they seem to kind of ebb and flow, but right now... Twitch is on the rise, YouTube on the rise. So those are kind of where most folks go, I think.
In both instances, if you are good enough and you have enough of a following, you can actually make a pretty decent living from streaming on Twitch or on YouTube, which is really kind of cool. And that's where these young gamers are trying to aspire to. But really, I'm just trying to share stuff. So I was able to set up the retro PC, my Pentium 3500 that I put together. This is a YouTube build video on the Hardware Asylum channel. You can check that out. And I linked that with the garage PC or the PC that I use to record the podcast.
So the machine that we're on right now.
Yeah, which is nothing really special. It's what? A Core i7 4770K? You know, DDR3. This is kind of a really...
Oh, it's getting long in the tooth. It might be time for a refresh here.
It definitely will. Now, when we put this machine together, I had the intention that it would be a multi-purpose computer. So there is a capture card in it. It's a little half-height, it got the D-sub in and also an HDMI in. So that way we could hook up, different video sources and then run those through the computer. Well, I figured, hey, I'm going to hook up my retro machine to this. I could just link it up directly. And I ran into problems immediately.
Well, it is an old retro PC build after all.
Well, it is. And the biggest issue there was that the capture card would only recognize certain resolutions.
Oh, so the resolutions were too low, I'm guessing?
Yeah, they were too low. So for
funny.
Yeah, for instance, when you are in a BIOS screen, it's something like 200 pixels by 150 pixels.
Okay, so you can scale it though, right?
You can, and you need another device for that. And that's something that I needed to make this whole process work together. So it's this kind of a build process, right?
All right, talk us through it.
So originally I set this machine up so I could stream hardware overclocking. Now I ran into issues where we had a syncing problem when the resolutions changed, but when you're streaming FireStrike Extreme, it starts out at your desktop resolution and then it scales down to whatever the resolution is for that particular benchmark. Now your monitor takes care of the resolution scaling in the background. So it says, now we're having a 1080p resolution. It goes down to, what is it, 720 by something, something, something. That signal will go to your monitor will scale it up to fit the screen. Now, when you're capturing that though, and you run it through OBS, it says, well, now you have 1080p. And when it changes that resolution, this picture that's being captured gets shrunken by half. And then there's a bunch of artifacts in the background that it's all flickering and it looks kind of bad.
Oh, like TV hackers, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
Look at those screens.
Yeah. So what I did to solve that is I got what they call a HDMI scaler. I think that's the best way to describe it. So this HDMI scaler is a device that a lot of offices have in their conference rooms.
So is this like a breakout box, an actual hardware box we're talking about?
Mm-hmm. It's an actual hardware box. The one that I picked up has a Ethernet cable on it, so you can log into it over the network and change certain aspects of it. Well, in the office environment, when you plug in your laptop to go into that projector,
right?
A lot of those projectors have a limited resolution. It was like 800 pixels or some crap like that because the 1080p version was more money than the building.
Back in the day.
Back in the day.
Yeah, and they never seem to get upgraded.
You know. So what this scaler does is it changes the input so that you don't have to change anything on your laptop to plug into the monitor, and then it automatically adjusts it before going to the projector. Well, now I'm using that to change the resolution of my retro PC machine that might be at 200 pixels wide to go to 640 pixels wide to, was it 1024 or something like that? So it takes all those different resolutions and then makes sure that they always get scaled up to 1080p.
So doesn't that mean that your older games are like suddenly giant 1-inch pixels or something?
No, it doesn't work like that. It basically interprets the signal and makes it interact a lot like your monitor would. So for instance, I can have a BIOS screen up on my retro PC on my 1080p monitor and it looks just normal. It just makes it bigger.
Nice.
The one thing that I did notice, though, is that while the scaling happens, it doesn't always look good. So I needed to make sure that when I was doing some scaling, I had the, the aspect ratio? That's what you want to call it.
Okay.
So on a standard 1080p monitor, it's something like 16 by 9. And on a old retro PC, it's usually 4 by 3. But they fudge around a little bit with that. So I needed to make sure that aspect ratio was the same. Otherwise, we had some weird stretching and whatnot. And that took a little while to set up.
Okay, so I'm not sure that I'm getting the flow here. So help me out here. So we're going from the retro PC
mm-hmm.
to the breakout box.
Yep.
The breakout box to the monitor.
Well, that is where...
And then to the streaming. Okay, I'm a little lost.
Yeah, well, you see, that is where another device comes into play.
Ah, okay. That's what I'm missing.
Yeah. So we have the scaling device, and then that outputs an HDMI signal. That HDMI signal can go directly into the streaming box, but then I wouldn't be able to see what I'm doing.
Okay.
I mean, I could look at the OBS screen and then maybe play the game that way, but instead what I wanted to do was split the signal. So I have an HDMI splitter that's in there taking the signal from the breakout box. One portion of it goes to my monitor that I'm going to be playing on, and the other one goes to the stream machine to go and get captured to OBS to then be streamed out to Twitch.
Oh, okay. But doesn't that introduce some sort of lag? I mean, you got so many devices translating. Is it even playable?
And there is no lag when you are completely up and running. There is a bit of lag when the resolution changes. Like if I go and reboot the computer, sometimes I get the tail end of the post screen. So that way it's like you don't get to see the first line that gets displayed, but then all of a sudden you get to see the you know, those details, the BIOS details that says what kind of processor you have, how much memory you have, and if there's hard drives and stuff like that. So you get to see those. And then once you're in Windows or whatever screen that you're on, everything at that point has zero latency, which is good.
Oh, yeah. So it is playable.
Yeah, it is. I had all of that hooked up. I got, hey, I have picture. I should be able to stream this.
Right.
For games that don't have audio, that was great.
There can't be many.
Yeah, not so much. Maybe NetHack. I streamed that once mm-hmm. off of the 386 machine. But what I did at this point was like, I have this high-end sound card. You know, it's an AW64 that's in that machine. I need to get the audio from that into the streaming PC so that I can hook into OBS and then ship it out. At first, I thought, well, I should just be able to add the audio to the scaler and then it could add it to the HDMI, you know, overlay it on HDMI, just like in your home theater, and then be able to capture that into the streaming PC. But turns out the scaler has a problem with the firmware that the company doesn't want to own up to.
So oh, no.
It will overlay the audio if it's HDMI in, but it won't overlay it if it's an analog source, even though it has a little plug for that, which is really stupid. So that is where the Focusrite,
another device,
which is a device that we use to record the podcast. So our XLR microphones go into that. We have zero latency monitoring through our headphones. And then there's a USB signal that goes into the streaming PC to capture the audio in Audacity. That's our DAW.
I'm about ready to make you make a process flow. Yeah. We need a PowerPoint.
something. So what I ended up doing was taking the audio signal from the Retro PC, putting it into one of the inputs on the back. So there's this is the 8i6, which has 8 inputs and 6 outputs, which is a lot, really. But we have on the back, we can plug in our 1/4-inch banana jacks that will go into, and each one of those is a right and a left, or they consider it an input. So in the software, I can say, hey, this is right and this is left, or I can combine it, make a stereo, stuff like that. I was able to take a couple of the RCA to 1/4-inch jacks, plug those into the Focusrite, and then plug that into the output on the AW64. And then I had to do some tweaking with the software to go and enable that other set of streams, because normally we just get stereo sound off of the Focusrite. And for a podcast, that's fine. It's just two people. But in this case, I also needed to be able to talk on a microphone, one of these things.
Yeah.
And then had headphones so I could hear the game and also hear myself if I'm talking. And then route all that audio through. So I needed to unlock another set of inputs and then route those through the mixer, which we had issues when we go to record the podcast because of that, actually.
Yeah.
And then run all of that stuff in the OBS.
And it worked.
And it worked.
Whoa, yay.
And it was pretty amazing. I took a picture on my phone of the mess of rat nest cables that was connecting everything together.
To find a way to post it, I guess.
But that got me thinking. It's like the streaming of a machine like this cannot be that difficult. But then I started, well, if you're going to be streaming your Xbox, how do you do it? It's just basically an HDMI cable you plug into the stream capture and then that goes back out to your television. So there's a man in the middle device, which is in this case, the garage PC.
Right.
But it was the interface. So on an Xbox, it's just HDMI. Well, I have an HDMI, but now I needed to add audio and then I needed to overlay my audio and then be able to, you know, do a zero latency monitor of all of that stuff. So it really added layer upon layer upon layer just because this happens to be a really, really old computer. And, you know, if you're going to stream on a modern PC, it's just a matter of, hey, we're going to fire up OBS and then we just capture the game because it can do that. It's all on the same machine. You don't have to do anything. It's just fire up a game and boom, you're ready to go.
There you go. The kids these days are so spoiled. They don't understand the Razz Nest.
So I'm hoping to do a few more of these streams in the future. So if you'd like to check them out, come out to twitch.tv/ninjalane. We're going old school with this channel name.
Now, well, it is retro.
It is retro. And I'm going to be streaming mostly some old retro games. So they're going to be period correct hardware. So for instance, I was playing Command & Conquer Tiberian Dawn, which is the very first one. I mean, that required a 486 back in the day. Really small little characters. It was really fun to play. And there was a couple of challenges, but After that, maybe we'll roll into some Quake, Quake 2, Unreal Tournament.
Who knows? Like. Yeah, maybe your request. But come check it out. In the last episode, we talked quite a bit about, well, two builds, really, now that I think about it. The streaming box that we're on now.
Yep.
And then the retro PC a little bit, just a touch base there. Mm-hmm. But we are Hardware Asylum, and what we really like is enthusiast-level hardware.
Yes.
And
I love it.
We've got a fancy new enthusiast build. Well, it's in progress as I'm looking at it over here on the bench.
Oh, yeah. And strangely enough, that build took up the area where I normally stream the retro stuff. So that has to get done before I can get back to doing some retro things.
So first of all, I'm excited because it is a beautiful black and white build. Well, mostly white even.
Well, yeah, it's a white build.
Which is difficult to do and near and dear to my own heart because I have a beautiful, in fact, it's here in the lab also, black and white build, the Carrera build from way back when, getting ready for some updated maintenance, mm-hmm. maybe next month. Yeah. But I wanted to take a chance to talk about what you're building, what's going into it, what your design decisions were, because this is not that $50,000 machine, but this is a pretty impressive high-end enthusiast PC.
Yeah. I must preface, this is not my PC, but it's one that I'm putting together for somebody.
Excellent. Well, that makes sense.
Yep.
As we do get asked to build PCs all the time.
Yeah. And in this case, I, instead of just saying, hey, go and buy this stuff, because that's what I did, then all of a sudden the stuff came in and said, hey, I need some help putting this together. I'm like, all right.
Well, cool. And I can see why, because this is not a simple build.
No, it is not. Although I want to say that it's along the lines of us as modders, we didn't really like the direction that the industry was taking. Does that make sense?
Right.
So for instance, this is an O11 from Landley.
Okay. So when that immediately makes me think of Windows, right? So we got, is it an aluminum case?
No, no.
How in the hell?
Landley used to be the premier aluminum case builder back in the day.
Oh my gosh, so beautiful.
Yeah. This is that that case that's really, really super popular with the younger crowd, the younger build crowd.
Oh, like streamers?
Yeah. And, you know, at LAN parties, you would always see at least one O11, and then somebody would say, hey, I wanted to build one of those. That was awesome. But they're really expensive. This case was like $300.
And it won a bunch of awards, case of the year on a couple of the major sites.
Mm-hmm. And it is still being built by Lan Lee. It's got DeBauer's name in it, so that's how he's getting rich. Not that I'm upset, but, you know, I'm a little upset. But the case is very well designed. It is a real true two-chamber chassis. So we have the front chamber, which has the basically the motherboard and the video card. And then behind that is where you have the power supply and all the storage and everything. So it's completely separate.
Well, I noticed it was a wider case, and that makes more sense now.
Mm-hmm. Well, and this is the XL edition or something like that. It's a much larger chassis. And the person that wanted it wanted more USBs up front. And this is the one that had two of them at the bottom, which is really stupid.
But lots of USB.
Yeah, lots of USB. Now, it's a white chassis. So they went after a white motherboard.
Ooh, there aren't many of those out there.
No, and they splurged. And we had to get this one out of Texas at a Micro Center.
Oh, wow.
Now, they didn't fly to Texas to go pick it up at the Micro Center. We have some people there that picked it up and then shipped it to us.
It's nice to have connections in the industry.
Yeah. Now, the motherboard is the Asus Z790 Apex.
Ooh, I see now the splurge, because that's practically a unicorn, isn't it?
It is. And the fact that it was re-released and optioned for a white, you know, that was at CES, for instance. They found that the board was so popular that they brought it back out, made a black and a white version. The white one is the one that we have here. It was like $800 or something like that.
And that's not the one with the OLED screen, right?
No, this is the overclocker edition. The Apex is the one that was designed for LN2 overclocking for high-end builds. It's one of the few motherboards you can buy that has the Z790 chipset with two PCI Express slots for video cards. So this is one that will do the PCI Express splitting like back in the SLI days.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So it has two slots on there, and it has a plethora. It supports four M.2 drives.
Nice.
Provided you don't have another video card plugged in. And it has the DIM2 slot or socket or whatever you want to call it. That's right next to the memory that supports two M.2 drives.
Oh, okay.
And that's kind of an Apex standard, which is pretty awesome, really.
Yeah, that's impressive, but wow, that's a spendy board.
Yeah.
Well, white looks great.
It's awesome. I mean, the PCB is white. It's got a little bit of fleck in it, which is pretty cool. The heat sinks that are on there are basically a silver whitish color, mostly silver for the most part. The owner wanted to go water cooling over the whole thing.
Nice.
So picked up a LGA 1700 water block from EK.
Nice.
It has the white trim panel on the side.
Now, they were advertising that as being made specifically for these style of boards, right?
Well, I'm not sure if they have them for the Apex, but for some of the other ASUS boards, they have the full coverage block. So it does DRM and the CPU.
The board specific ones.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And a lot of the modders or builders, whatever you want to call it, that build in the O11 do the full coverage block because they go after the Ryzens and some of the lower cost motherboards that have that coverage block on it, which is pretty cool.
It looks good in a window, so I don't blame them.
Yep. Now, with the O11 being as popular as it is, EK has built a distribution plate. So they have, for certain editions of the O11, the distribution plate goes in the side where normally hard drives and fans go. But this one is a much larger distribution plate and it fits in the front.
Okay, so I noticed that it replaces the whole front panel, or is it behind the glass maybe? Because really you've got, basically a water maze is the whole front glass window.
Yeah, and it does replace the entire front bit of the chassis. You just basically unscrew it and you put this one in. It gets a few new replacement parts. So like the fans in the bottom, it moves them back a bit so that everything will clear, which is pretty awesome.
Nice.
There's still a glass panel that will go over top of it to protect it, which is pretty awesome. And that's the factory glass.
Right.
But once you install that distribution plate, then you have direct access to plug in your CPU block. And you have, I think there's 6 or 7 or 8. Well, there's 2. So it's up to 8 ports so that you can hook up graphics cards.
Okay, so you got a lot of water cooling options right off of that distro block, which is nice because it's large.
Yeah, it's a big case. And that's where, you know, as modders, these large cases make it really easy to build. Well, EK has made this extremely easy for people to just assemble. So like when we put together your build, we had to make a few modifications and move some things around just because it didn't fit exactly where we wanted.
Oh, yeah. Well, and bend in the old tubes, right?
Oh, yeah. Bend the tubes and make sure they line up. Well, with this particular setup and the way that it's aligned, EK has kind of designed it to be almost perfect.
Wow.
Okay. I say perfect because, for instance, we have a 25 millimeter radiator up top, a 25 millimeter radiator down below. That's the thickness of them. And with just a 28 millimeter and a 14 millimeter extension and the rotary 90s, which we put into your build,
right?
They line up directly with the distribution plate.
So no bends, just
no bends.
that's nice.
And well, and EK makes these push fittings, I think specifically for these plates. So you screw that into the 90 and put a little bit of silicone lube on there. And you just push them in.
Oh, how nice is that? No threads?
No threads.
Wow.
Well, it's a lot like that big plate that we put on your motherboard that hooked into the formula water cooling that went over the VRM.
Right.
It just dropped down on top. Well, those O-rings are just a little bit of grease on there, and they slide into place and then lock down. That's the same way that it works here, except that the radiator is basically holding that lock. So you slide the radiator forward, you just tighten up the screws, and boom, you're done. It's pretty amazing how that fits together and the engineering required to make sure that, one, EK had the parts available and that the holes were in the right spot.
Well, it definitely looks great. I can't imagine it was cheap, though.
No, it's not cheap at all. Well, and we're not even done.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So we have a 1,000-watt thermal take power supply that's in the back, fully modular.
Sure, and it's got to be white, right?
No, actually, it's black because you never see the power supplies behind everything.
Oh, yeah, because it's got that two compartment.
Yep, and the back panel is solid, so there's no glass in the back.
Nice.
Which is, I kind of like it that way.
Well, that's probably good because there aren't a lot of white power supplies anyway.
No, I think I reviewed one from Cooler Master, and it really wasn't a very good power supply. But we move to the things that are good. We have a RTX 4090 Strix.
Nice.
OC edition.
Ooh, now that's not a cheap part either, especially right now.
No. That's with the whole embargo going on with China and the whole AI chip movement. Basically, they were going out of stock, much like in the mining days. And it, you know, I think it was a $2,200 card out of the shop.
Holy cow. But I am a little jealous because right now that's still the top dog out there.
So to make this video card even more top dog,
okay,
you know, we wanted the full build to be water cooled. So we got another EK water block to go on top of that. And this is the type of block that you can get two different versions of. So you have the version where it has just the block with the water cooling on the GPU and memory side. But they had a version of it that had dual-sided water cooling. So it would be water cooling the back plate as well.
Fancy.
Now, we didn't go with the water cooling on the back plate because it was an extra, like, a lot of money.
Well, and a bit overcooled, right? Because you've already got so much cooling in that case.
Exactly. And we're doing a vertical GPU. So Lanli offers a vertical GPU conversion, if you will. And it's basically a frame that you remove a bunch of the expansion slots from the case. And you slide this in, and it basically screws into where the expansion slots would normally grew into.
Nice. Well, that does put the heat sink, or in this case, the water block, up against the glass, right? So that's going to look snazzy.
That is what surprised me, really, because in the Thermaltake builds that we've done, they have a similar bracket, but it positions the video card statically. Well, with this bracket that Lanli has provided, you have the option to move the card in one of three positions.
Oh, wow.
And I think that's mostly to accommodate for, like, single, dual, and quad.
The giant heat sinks.
Giant heat sinks, yeah.
That makes sense, but you don't have a giant heat sink because you got a water block.
Have a water block. It turns out that they needs to be in the closest position to the motherboard to be able to hook it into the distribution plate, though. And that's something that when I was starting to mess around with, well, I can move this out forward, but then all of a sudden the ports that would come off of the GPU lined up directly with the ones on the distribution plate to the point where you couldn't get a 90 and a clean bend to it.
Oh, yeah. So you didn't want to do a custom bend. I get that.
No, and actually that was a request from the client that the tubes be completely straight.
Well, yeah, because you want it to look the same as the ones that are feeding off the CPU and the GPU both.
Exactly. So okay. They may be no bends, straight. So instead, the video card is going to be positioned all the way back, and then we have a 90 that will do a straight tube to the distribution block. And then there's another 90 and a 28 millimeter extension, again, 28 millimeters, that will then put that second pipe parallel to the one behind it directly into the distribution block.
Wow, that's gonna look pretty sharp. So you told me you were gonna do something special with the power routing to that video card too. What's up with that?
Well, there is this, there's a concern in the enthusiast community about the power port on the RTX 4090 and 4070, the 40 series and 30 series. It's that 12 volt high power socket.
Right.
Which is weird because PCI Express power is 6 to 8 pins. They were big,
yeah.
Huge.
Oh, yeah.
Well, you get this other one, it packs another couple of ports in there, but they're really, really small. And of course, people are complaining that they're melting because there's a lot of current coming through.
Yeah, and that's an expensive card to melt.
Well, and I think the people have figured it out and is basically bending the wires too close to the port, and it's causing undue stress and pulling some of those wires out of those small pins. So there's this recommendation that you don't have a bend within, 40 centimeters of the plug? But that makes it really difficult to route the power to the graphics card, especially when it's mounted vertically and you're trying to make it look good. Well, it turns out that there are these devices that are basically a PCB board that has those two power ports on both sides, and it will do a 180 degree turn. So you plug that into the graphics card and you plug the power in from the bottom behind the card. And if it's vertical, you'll never see it.
Oh, I like that. And it takes that connectivity issue out of the picture completely with the card.
Mm-hmm. And hopefully that won't cause any of the burning problems. You know, it's rated for 600 watts, which is what people are recommending for the 4090. Yeah, I think it'll work out pretty well.
Excellent. Okay. So I know we've missed some components. Let me see. RAM. Let's talk RAM. Memory.
All right. So we went with the G-Skill Trident DDR5. So we got 32 gigs of that, or maybe it was 64. I don't know. They bought the RAM. But the idea was the heat spreaders are a silver white, which matches perfectly with the Apex motherboard.
Ooh, nice.
And of course, you have the RGB across the top, which is great. Let's see. Storage, they went with... actually, my recommendation to go with a Patriot 4300 NVMe drive, which is the fastest Gen 4 NVMe drive I've ever tested.
Wow. Okay. I didn't realize Patriot.
Yeah, Patriot.
And, way to go.
And they went with two of those drives at 2 terabytes each. So we got 4 terabytes of storage. Way too much, in my opinion.
Well, but that should do, right? Well, especially if you got external storage.
Well, this is mostly to store games. So we have a lot of
high-speed games.
Yeah, we have a lot of 80 to 100 gigabyte games that people are downloading, and you don't want to do that more than once because that's a big.
So is the plan to raid these or have a storage drive or?
It's a primary drive and a storage drive, so there won't be any raid.
Dennis, we've talked quite a bit about the water cooling solution, but looking at the case there, I'm seeing an awful lot of traditional fan cooling. So talk me through that.
Okay, so the fans are from Lan Li, of all places. And at Computex, they started highlighting some of their customizable fans and cables and stuff. So you could do the EL lighted cables or power cables and stuff like
that. Yeah.
Well, the fans, they had these daisy chainable fans. And basically, you have the 120 millimeter fan with a couple of sockets on both sides and some contacts. And you could daisy chain up to, I think, 4 fans together. You just lock them in. And you don't
like Legos kind of. I remember that, right?
Yeah, and you don't have to run a cable in between all of them. And at that point, there's one solid mass, which is pretty cool. So we have a total of, 10 fans in this build. For basically every position that you could put a fan. So there's 3 intake fans in the vertical next to the motherboard in front of the distribution plate.
So those are really pulling air into that back compartment then?
Yeah, it's pulling air from the back compartment, which is also vented to the outside. So that's one of the primary intakes. We have another intake from the radiator at the bottom. So it's pulling air up from the ground level through the radiator, going vertical because heat rises.
Right.
And then we have 3 exhaust fans for the top radiator that exhausts out the top. And then we have a single fan in the back that exhausts out the back. Now, what's kind of special about these fans is that 6 of them are reverse fans. And it's something that we talked about before with the SWA fans from Thermaltake, where you could interchange the centers. Well, with Lan Li, they have different SKUs. So they have a forward fan and a reverse fan. And the idea here is that some of them are reversed, so you don't see the back of the fan, but you still have air flowing the direction you want it to go.
Very nice. Yeah, I saw those had kind of a shiny mirror surface in the middle that's going to look really pretty cool.
Oh, and that's another feature of these fans. I mean, they are RGB lighted, and they have a central controller, which is pretty cool. It runs along that same pad when you connect them together. But when the lights come on, you have infinity mirrors in the center hub and along the edges. So when the fans light up, you also have this infinity effect that adds to that.
Oh, man, I can't wait to see that. And of course, with everything white, the color is going to be whatever you want everywhere.
Yeah, we have lights on the GPU block. We have lights on the CPU block. We have lights on the fan. We have lights on the motherboard. We have lights along the side of the distribution plate. And we even have lights in the chassis, but I think those are all covered up.
Well, I got to ask you, is there a plan to do white liquid in liquid cooling?
Oh, now this is something that you're going to love.
Okay.
Clear liquid.
Ooh.
But it's going to have a blue UV dye in it.
Oh, nice.
So some of that will react with the LED lights inside. And we might actually put in one of those LED strips, the UV strips like what we had in your first build.
Right, right. Charge it up a little.
Yeah, put that kind of in the back so that it's hidden, but then it just kind of makes things glow. But I believe that UV will react nicely with the LED lights that are already in the system.
Very slick. Well, sounds like a super cool build. I know we don't normally talk price, but since we made such a joke about last month's build, mm-hmm. do you want to ballpark about what a build like this would cost without going into any details?
I think if we're north of $8,000, we still haven't paid enough for it.
Oh my gosh.
And some of that is, you know, we have an inflated price on the 4090. We have insane motherboard that is really overkill for the build. And you wouldn't believe how much each one of those EK fittings cost.
Oh no, I would believe it because we've done it before.
Yeah.
They're crazy.
It all adds up, and it adds up quick, which is pretty crazy in itself. But when the build is done, I think it's going to look amazing. And I'll definitely be posting pictures on hardwareasylum.com.
Sounds like we might need to do some video too to get some of that lighting effect. I can't wait to see it.
For more information on the topics discussed in this podcast, please consult our show notes on hardwareasylum.com. Stay up to date on the latest at Hardware Asylum by subscribing to our RSS and follow us on Twitter. This has been an Engine Lane production, copyright 2023. Thanks for listening.